What is precious is never to forget. The delight of the blood drawn from ageless springs breaking through rocks and worlds before our earth. Never to deny its pleasure in the simple morning light, nor its grave evening demand for love. Never to allow gradually the traffic to smother with noise and fog the flowering of the spirit. These words are given to us by Stephen Spender. I extend a warm welcome to our visitors and guests and everyone here. Please take a moment to greet each other. Say good morning, hello, how are you? As a Unitarian Universalist congregation, we freely gather this morning to live out our democratic faith. We believe that every person is holy, has worth to be recognized, and is called to the tasks of love and joy. We celebrate the gifts of life each of us give each other in our own unique way to make this a compassionate community, and a fun one. We gather so that truth may grow roots of connection and wings of hope, to know that revelation is not dead. When nurtured, truth evolves and grows in the heart of a community and makes service and its good works a cause for joy. All that we have ever loved and all that we have ever been stands with us on the brink of all that we aspire to create, a deeper peace, a larger love, a more embracing hope, a deeper joy in this life we share. So we light the candle, the chalice, the light of our free faith. Now let us stand and sing, enter, come in, and rejoice. No, sorry. It's announcements time. Please pay attention to the announcements in our order of service. And I have an additional announcement. Before the sermon, Dick and Judy Cattell will be sharing a personal reflection, Building a Room for Joy. So now, let us please sing Enter, Rejoice, and Come In, 361.
Oh,
Now is the time in our order of service when we set aside all the stuff that engages us in a way that keeps us from recognizing the heights of our days and the depths that sometimes bring us into the dark shadow. So please share, if you are willing and want to, a personal joy and or concern. Is there anybody who would like to share one this morning?
This is not a terribly joyous thing that happened, but I was very shook by it, and it was an anti-Semitic incident last Monday night. Jim had had a great idea that if I didn't want to go to my floor supper because of the prayer, that I should go to other floor suppers. So I thought Annelle was a very good person to go to with her group. Well, afterwards, this time, I've been there about 3 times, I think. Afterwards, I was walking with some people that I thought were very tolerant. And I said, there's a reason why I'm coming. And I must admit, I'm trying to build up a little bit of a head of steam there without making a lot of noise, because I have not talked to my neighbors about this at all. And I'm very friendly with my neighbors. And if they notice that I'm not coming to their floor supper, it's the onus is on them to do something about it, not me. Anyway, I said, there is a reason. And this woman turned around, and she came over to me, and she said, no, you're wrong. You should be working this out with your neighbors. And then her husband was saying, no, he didn't want her to say what she was saying. And then she said, you don't belong in this group. And I didn't know that these were exclusive clubs. But of course, I wouldn't go again. And of course, this was a great idea, which wasn't going to work, obviously. Jim was the one that thought of it. And then Annelle said, well, you can eat with us. And actually, Lincoln said, why don't you eat with me?
Thank you, Ruth, very much.
What?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you.
I'm Jennifer, and I have 2 animal stories over the span of 2 weeks, so there's a concern followed by a joy. The first was an unfortunate kitten incident, of which I was a bystander in a sad incident, 2 kittens. But then it was followed yesterday by the happy incident of myself finding a baby duck in the highway on 24 and found a home for it. So things have circles to them.
This may not be personal. I'm sure it's everyone joy. Our garden's growing well.
All right.
And if you heard the excitement earlier, someone spotted the bounce house that's been inflated outside.
Yay!
My concern is that my kids are going to be gone for a whole week, going to camp next week, so keep your thoughts out for me.
My 8-year-old nephew just got back from a procedure and is doing well. Just like everyone's thoughts and prayers from a speedy recovery.
Yeah, just note that Virginia's father passed away a week and a half ago, and the service was last week. Thank you.
Good morning, Christopher Renner. Just a concern, Marion Quinlan's daughter, Karen Cook, underwent a mastectomy on Thursday, and it was further along the cancer than they thought. So instead of being a stage 2, it's a stage 3, and she's going to have to undergo radiation as well as chemotherapy. So keep Marion and Karen in your thoughts.
Tom Manny, our oldest granddaughter, gave birth yesterday to our youngest great-grandson. And a family of wrens fledged in our carport, all in one day.
Jim Chantel, I've sort of gone through a momentous event here. As of June 1st, which was just a couple of days ago, I am officially on Medicare. That's a bit of a scary thought. I'm still trying to figure out how this system works.
Thank you, everyone, for sharing your joys.
Well, we're not quite through.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know how you hate to ask somebody working on his dissertation how it's coming? And people quit asking us after we had two failed attempts to sell our house, two attempts to fall through. Well, the third one held up, and we now own only one. We in the bank now own only one house. The money is in the bank, the little that was left over after we paid it off. And we also had three cars, one more than we wanted. And as of yesterday morning, it was gone, and I could have sold it twice. I'm in the wrong business.
All right. Now, is there anybody else who would like to share a joy or concern before I... Okay, thank you, everyone, for sharing your joys and concerns. Let us keep in mind that there are many joys and concerns that are not shared, and that we need to be thoughtful and present to everybody with that in mind. And practice joy, especially today. So, the children's conversation. Do we want everyone to come forward? Corey and I would like everyone to come forward that would like to come forward. Come and help us. Hey, Connor. Hey, Nick. Hello. All right. Do you guys want to go on the other side over here? Do you want them all? Okay.
Great. Okay. Awesome. Do you want to start?
Okay. Every child, every youth, and adult deserves to be held in love, to be held in the fullness of love, its most active sense. As parents, teachers, friends, and community members, giving ourselves to understanding the paths that we are all on to become whole and good people, we support and care for one another. Today, we recognize those teachers who have given from themselves greatly to these children for years and years and years, and the work they have done is really important and needs appreciation, recognition, and praise. So, take it away.
Thank you.
When the consultant came a month ago, the RE committee sat down with her and talked about where we were and where we were headed, and part of my commentary to her was that one of the strengths of our RE program is that we have phenomenal teachers. And she looked at me and she said, "That is the first time that anyone has ever said that to me." And it's true. We are incredibly lucky to have the RE teachers that we have here. All of the changes that go on, we've had constant, amazing support. I, as the DRE this past year, could not have done the job I did without them. They were unbelievable in terms of their dedication and devotion and pure love of working with our children. And I thought I could go on and on, but what might be more meaningful is for them to hear what their students have to say about them. So I solicited, in a semi-harassing way, some commentary. So for Catherine and Courtney, because their children can't talk, some parents wrote their comments in. I'd like to thank Catherine Courtney, along with Sandy, Molly, and Larry, for making our family feel so welcome in the nursery and at RE events. It's so nice to think our son will have the RE program to grow up in, led by such warm, caring, and dynamic people. Thank you. Thank you for holding me, playing with me, and listening to me cry. I really do love the nursery, even if I don't always show it. Sloan Zeller. These were the comments for Sandy. I have so much fun with Sandy. I love her crafts. Sandy is fun. I like how we play in class. Sandy is nice. I love Sandy. She is beautiful. I like that she lets us be crazy. She lets us cut out circles, triangles, squares, and rectangles. I love her. She's nice. She's fun. I like that she shares the Play-Doh. She tells the truth. Dear Sandy, I think you're interesting. I liked the cupcakes. Thank you. This one makes me cry every time, and I've been practicing it so I wouldn't. I really love Miss Sandy, and I'm going to miss her in my San Antonio house. That one's from Kieran Meyer. Okay. Molly. Molly teaches really well. I can really understand what she means. Molly is nice and helps us learn, and she reads stories about Moses, and she lets us eat soda ice cream and cereal without milk. I like my mom being my teacher. She knows what I like, so all of her lessons are really fun. I like it that she's Nick's mom. I have a million more things I like about her, but I just don't remember them. Larry, he's very patient and he knows a lot. I like Larry because he tells great stories and takes us to the Memorial Garden. I like Larry's voice. Larry is great because he really listens to kids and takes their suggestions seriously. He does whatever he can to make their suggestions happen. He also sticks to his promises when he says he's going to do something for the kids, even if it takes a while. I really, really like him and want him to be my teacher again next year. He makes the classes funner, and he's really nice to all of us. When I thought about the older group, I didn't expect him to sing and have us act out Bible stories, but I really liked that he did that. It was really cool. I think all of our teachers are really cool, and I'd like them to all come forward now so we can see them up on the stage. Courtney, Catherine, Sandy, Molly, and Larry. I thought this year we'd start a new tradition of Teacher of the Year. We had 5 contenders, and I used a scale based on their devotion to the kids, time spent with them in and out of class, their knowledge of the subject matter, and their love for learning. And this year's winner is everybody! So they all have tote bags to use that says that they're the 2012 Teacher of the Year. Yes, now you can card stuff. We tried to make it look subtle so it's not too embarrassing, but you can wear it with pride. Wear it with pride. Thank you. Kids, now is a time that we can go through and you can hug your teachers and just say thank you, because this is the end of our school year program. Our World Travelers program kicks off today. And just thank you guys so much. You are amazing. Thank you. Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere. Everywhere you may go.
How shall I enter into the presence of joy, be just and kind, come with an open and generous heart, and share your gifts freely? Let us receive the offering. Now, Judy and Dick Cattell will share a room made for joy.
Our home in the Colorado foothills of 53 years had light from three different directions and views of the Ponderosa Forest and the Continental Divide. There was a large porch, which we spent a lot of time with friends and family, but only in the summertime. When we moved to Kansas, we hoped for a long view. Maybe that would continue our feeling of living outdoors. Our vacations during the summer were hiking, backpacking, and boating. So we were always out in the mountains. And when we did arrive, we ended up that we traded a mountain view of the Colorado Continental Divide and sunsets. And now we have sunrises and a view of the prairies of eastern Kansas. It's no less beautiful, it's just different from what we had. The one thing we found was nobody in Kansas seemed to want to sit out in the sun. And so after spending a whole summer, last summer, which was pretty hot, on our porch most of the time, we finally decided what we would do was go ahead with our plan for an all-season room, which would bring the outdoors in, and vice versa. So we now have a room in place of the porch that has skylights, sliding glass windows with screens, and heating and air conditioning, so that it has really been a great joy to us to be able to continue some of our experience with the outdoors, but in a little more comfort for our age. And lo and behold, Kansans seem to enjoy it too.
This is our room of joy, and we have time there to reflect, read, study, and write, and share being together for meal times and quiet times. And it's always nature-watching time. Sunrise, the rays of the sun turning the hummingbird feeder glass gold. Moonrise and familiar stars through the skylights, and the full moon last night. And changing skies, spectacular clouds and storms. Leaf trees, we were used to ponderosa without leaves. And so leaf trees bending, we watched a screeching cardinal hanging on to a maple branch as he trapezed back and forth in the wind. And colors, we have birds flashing by, red cardinals, blue bluebirds, bringing moths now to their peeping nestlings. The guarding male dive bombing bigger birds and the poor squirrels. And we have orange orioles, gold goldfinches, black red-winged blackbirds, and clumps of wildflowers. We also have wildlife. We have coyote, deer, rabbits, squirrels. It was fun to watch the squirrel trying to get onto the squirrel whirl around with the corn cobs. Whoa, he had a lot of trouble doing that. But best of all is having people there and sharing the room with new friends and old. We've had lots of Colorado visitors who sleep in that room and thoroughly enjoy it. And we very much enjoy having our friends here. And we realize that we are so unbelievably lucky to have this room with a view and the privilege denied to most of growing old together. We should also say this is the anniversary of our being here 1 year in this church, which has been so welcoming to us.
Thank you, Dick, and thank you, Judy. Making room for joy. We come to the fellowship on Sunday morning to make room for joy. Yes, we do. To be reminded and inspired to be grateful again. To be called to celebrate what is good. To honor the need for spiritual freedom and the joy that can be felt when it achieves its worthy goals. How much room for joy is there in your life? How does its presence or lack of it shape your life and the lives of the people you live with, work with, play with? How does joy move in and out of your life? Is it a reward for and after hard work, like a prize? Is it, as it is for many religions, found after you die, as long as you have done good works, followed the commandments, then you may be allowed to rejoice in God's good favor, sit on his left or his right-hand side and hold his or her hand? Is it always that point after you get done with something? Work first, joy later. when Unitarian Universalism holds, while Unitarian Universalism holds many spiritual and intellectual paths in its expansive embrace, our primary intellectual and spiritual focus is on the here and now, this moment, not what's going to happen in an hour or 10 hours or a year. It's right now. That's at the heart of Unitarian Universalism. That's its pulse, that's its beat now. Of course, we need to pay attention to what's happened in the past and learn from all the lessons that history has to offer so that we may not repeat mistakes in the future. Of course, we have to make that kind of supple transition between all levels and understanding of what time is in our life. But if you do not have joy, where are you in this time? One of the tests of whether you're living fully, I believe, in the present is to monitor the amount of joy you experience in everyday living. So when you get up, do you say, like my father did, crap? Or do you take time and say, thank you? Or do something that acknowledges that you're beginning your day? Do you mark the beginning of your consciousness as you leave the semi and unconscious behind you? Or is it just something you do? You go get a cup of coffee, you brush your teeth, you do whatever you do. This is a place where it's very important, I think, to set aside a moment to recognize a transition point. You're tipping into another reality. It doesn't just happen. It takes our consciousness. It's like the canary in the coal mine. If you are living a life without joy, you die in your spirit, you die in your emotions, you even become arid intellectually. Everything kind of dries up without joy. So that's one way to measure. If you feel dried up, arid, and without the capacity to rise up, to lift up, to praise, to say hallelujah, whatever it is, where are you in this mine of your life? Where is the canary? Is it singing its joyful kind of canary song, or is it laying on the scattered birdseed dead? Joy's counterbalance is sorrow. When we are going through a tough phase, it is especially important to keep joy available, to keep access points to joy available to you. An example of this is happened to me this last Friday. I started a new medication, and Chuck will attest to this. It was just gloom. I was just in the worst possible mood I've been in years. I could not do anything. I could barely function. So I did menial tasks like pulling weeds. I could do that. I could go feed the chickens. I could give them some weeds. I could pet the dog, but that was about it. And as I wandered around the orchard pulling weeds, I said, oh my gosh, look at that. There was a poppy, a deep, strong pink poppy just opening its beautiful face to me. I hadn't planted it. It was there, and it surprised me into a moment of, oh, I'm not stuck. I'm not stuck in this hell realm where you just feel like everything is awful, and you just, anyway, everyone probably has had that experience, and I don't wish it on anybody, but when it does happen, there are moments when that flower opens itself to you, and it opens itself to you because there is nectar inside that you can draw on, that you can pull up inside you and be fed by its beauty. Many spiritual paths hold the flower as a metaphor for grace and for goodness and for opening up to all that's magnificent in the world. So for that one moment when that poppy showed its face to me, I understood how that was true. What is joy? The exaltation of spirit. It can be an expression of sympathetic joy, a congratulation, a thank you, as we experienced today as Corey led all the kids in thanking the RE teachers. It can be a vivid emotion of pleasure, arising from a sense of well-being, happiness, a state of bliss, an outward rejoicing, mirth, jubilant festivity, or a quiet rejoicing of something that might seem so insignificant to everybody else but you. Simple, simply to be glad. Joy catalyzes fusion. Day-to-day life, the living of life, its segmentation into tasks, when all the integral parts of our character become one. This is a fusion, when everything comes together. And what are the states that make that happen? Joy is one of them. Joy is one of those experiences that you can always recognize when you feel as if you are one with the world, or you're one with your partner, or you're one with your neighbor, or one with the painting, or one with your school, your class, whatever it is that helps you feel not separated, but very much inside of. That is fusion. And that's what Unitarian Universalism seeks to give to each and every person, a possibility for that fusion. To take all the puzzle pieces and put them together into a big picture, not interlocking parts, but that transformation when it all fits and you can see your life fully. And it may be from something very small. Something so infinitesimally small or great, who knows? But pay attention, if you will, to those moments when you feel that oneness happening, because here is a time when you can say, I can apply that here, I can apply that there. This is what spiritual practice is built on, paying attention to those moments with intentionality that says yes to fusion, yes to wholeness, yes to coherence, yes to what I most need in life. I don't care what anybody else says. I will find my way. This is fusion, and it's very much connected to joy. Causes for joy. Well, as Judy and Dick shared, the outdoors can be an amazing source of pleasure and joy for every person. A butterfly, a hummingbird, a child's first word, their first step, the rumpus of puppies who are just learning how to walk, and they're bumbling and jumbling over each other and snapping and barking, and you just can't do anything but laugh because it's so funny. It's so joyous. We need puppies. We need children. We need that energy which allows us to see the squirrel going after that corn and just getting connected to that and feeling the oneness of that. And it also comes sometimes when we figure out something that we've been struggling with, a pattern of behavior that's not working. And all of a sudden, click, a light goes on. And it's just, whoa, I understand now. That's a quiet moment of joy. And then there is the kind of joy we associate with winning or losing. When you get the first prize for the poem, or you get your book selected as the contest winner with among 5,000 other applicants, your grant is the one that gets through. Your photography is celebrated, or something that you have done is lifted above everybody else as exceptional. And we all hopefully have had moments in our lives when that has happened, when something we have done gets recognized and we can just go, yeah. But we know that that feeling doesn't last for very long. At least for most of us, it doesn't. It's a temporary kind of joy. So it begs me to ask the question, what are the things that begin to provide a more permanent, stable, foundational access to joy? The flowers. And this last week, I remember talking to the head of the Master of Fine Arts program in writing at Goddard College, Ruth. And she said that she knows that teaching is going really well when she is able to find that strength in each and every student that she is working with in the MFA program and help them identify it and build on it and have it become the vehicle to their transformation as a writer. So it's not picking on the things that they don't do well. It's not that critical kind of focusing in on, oh, that's not working, you need a semicolon here, and then I think really get rid of all those dashes, please. It's, wow, look at how you've done this. See how it works. Do you understand? So to choose your strengths over your weaknesses without just dispensing with all your weaknesses, because they can also, if you work on them, if they are a real problem that you are tripping up on in your life, they can help you. But we are in a culture that often uses the critical evaluative method to determine what is best. And in UU culture, UU spirituality, Unitarian Universalism, we are asked to look at the strengths of each and every person, the gifts that they have to bring to this community, and to honor them, to give thanks for them. And so if someone is forgetful, we know that. You don't hold it against them. If someone does it this way and you do it that way, well, there's room for both ways, unless it makes the building go on fire or something disastrous happens. Of course, there are limits, but really, the more easygoing pattern allows much, much more space and room for joy. I remember in fifth grade when Miss Majors, she was such a beautiful young woman, she had just graduated from University of Illinois with her teaching degree, so we were her first class, and she was a great teacher, just unquestionably great. And one day she asked the class, I want everyone to bring in a picture of you when you were a baby. And we thought, oh, a baby contest picture. And so we all brought in our pictures. And we thought, oh, who's going to be the cutest? Who's going to be the best baby picture? Who's going to have that picture? I thought, well, my class pictures are always awful, but I've got a chance with this baby picture because it's pretty darn cute. And then lo and behold, we all come into class one morning, and all of the pictures are all around the room. And underneath one says, nicest curl. Another one, the best smirk. The other one, the most twinkling eyes. So she had awarded everyone with a place in the room to be recognized. And we were surrounded by that recognition. We were held by that recognition. But I also remember at 10 years old understanding how competitive a world we lived in. Because you knew if you were picked third for the football game after school, or the fourth, or the last, you knew who was going to be picked first. You knew who you were in that pecking order. And it could hurt, or it could feel great. Here we're back to that winning or losing theme again. And so in fifth grade, we had our first science fair at our school, and I thought I came up with an amazing project. I had a volcano that erupted and has just spewed out wonderful steam and smoke everywhere. And I spent hours crafting this incredible volcano with trees and with rocks and with streams and with birds. and then it would erupt. And I only got an honorable mention. So I said, okay. I walked around the room, and I looked at the first and second prizes and said, what's going on with these? How does it work? What's the equation? So for the next 3 years, I won first place in the science fair. But it wasn't with the same joy that I had making that volcano. I'd figured out the formula that would get the attention and get the acknowledgement and get first place. It didn't feel that good. It felt contrived. I was glad to be number one, but it really wasn't that good. So, what happens when we have candidates we love and candidates we hate and basketball teams we think are just the best in the world and those basketball teams that, well, let's not even talk about them, please, that we get ourselves so worked up over something that, oh, I just can't stand that, or, oh, I just, oh, that's my favorite. What happens to the emotional interior? What happens to that landscape where joy has a place? When you win, you're on top of the world. If you win the national championship, you're out there with 15, 20,000 other people hooting and hollering and screaming. There's a great unity. But what about all those people who are watching the team that lost? It's not a joy that lasts. It's a lot of fun when you win. And it can be heartbreaking when you lose. So, how do we make a practice, a spiritual practice, that creates more room for joy in our lives? It's important, I think we would all agree, that joy be present in our lives. It's not just for the children. It's not just for that happy-go-lucky person. It's for everyone. Without joy, there's emptiness. Meaning is malnourished. Joy has lasting power, and it brings people together. Perhaps this could be called fundamental joy, joy that brings people together, that makes the divide go away, that brings a unity. So to respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person is that foundational step for joy. A very difficult one to do because we all probably have very powerful dislikes and likes around certain people who are running for office or who are in office or other kinds of things. But we're called to move away from that severe tendency to categorize and say that person is bad, this person is good. And while it may be true on some level, but on some deep foundational level where joy is available, you have to move beyond that place of categorization. You cannot say this person is not acceptable, even though we will probably continue to do it. The practice is to be a little more open, to be a little more porous. And we all know, all of us who have ever fallen in love with a full heart and with all the joy that rockets and explodes, that first year is just incredible. And then, you know, life sets in. You know, I think I'd rather read, or I think I'd rather go for whatever it is, but we all know what that's like. So another quality of joy, of lasting joy, foundational joy, is loyalty. It's fidelity. It's sticking with something when things don't always go your way. Sometimes you do have to leave, but it should be a considered decision. It shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction. That person is no longer, I hate that person now. And a year ago, they were absolutely head over heels in love with that person. How does that happen? It's because there was no foundation of loyalty, of fidelity, of relaxed quality that says, okay, maybe we are not meant to be together, but let us part peacefully. Sometimes that's not possible, but you can, in your heart, wish for that other person peace. Not easy to do, but it is a practice that makes room for joy. Serve others. Be glad for their good fortune. Celebrate the seasons, births and deaths, life passages, hard work, the selling of a house. Celebrate all those things. Make it a practice to celebrate. It doesn't have to be a big deal, but to not have gratitude, to not have the ability to feel in your heart gratitude, is that drying up, that arid state, that joyless state. One must be intentional. Meditate, do yoga, watch the birds. They're an incredible source of joy. Reading, music, a good chat, the morning sun, painting, hopscotch, holding hands, cat petting, finding your way into that place where joy is available. Choose ways of living that help you to remain open and supple, to be grateful for all this life and the incredible beauty it has to offer. Find more than one way to practice. Work your praise muscles. They atrophy when not used. Sing, whistle, dance. Sit at dawn reciting your favorite poem. This last week, a week and a half ago now, or something like that, I had the good fortune of being with my mother as she started her chemotherapy regimen for her feisty leukemia. And I thought, well, I have never sat in a room with people who are hooked up to bags of solution that are so strong that they can kill the cancer. So I sat there with 12 other people, and I thought, oh, what's happening? I don't feel anxious at all. I listened to the people talk. One guy had been battling with colon cancer for 14 years, and every single day has to take a medicine to keep his immune system high enough, functioning at a high enough level so that he won't just plummet. So he was talking to someone he had known a long time ago that was in with stage 4 cancer, and he was just as frightened as could be, and his wife was trying to put on that happy face and say, and just be productive, and you could just see it in his eyes, that tenderness. When I would leave the room, and if my mother needed help, he was the person to go to her and help her. You can move that thing around with the IV pole. And he helped her. And there was another man who just talked the whole time. And afterwards, I said to Mom, I go, oh, my God, I was just, that was a little bit much. And she goes, oh, no, he needs to talk. That's the way he lets go of all the stress. That lets you know that he's really worried that he might die. I said, wow, thank you, Mom. And I found that it really was a place where there was hope, because everyone was trading stories and trying to help one another find their way through this very difficult journey with life and death. They were all there in some way for one another. There was a companionship thing going on that was remarkable. There were some jokes, there was laughter. But most of all, there was a quiet kindness that pervaded that room, so that fear could find its place and its intersection with hope. And it was a place of quiet joy, a joy that I never expected to find in that place, where probably a third of those people in a year will be dead. They were living in the moment. They were living there for themselves and one another. They knew what the stakes were. They knew how precious life is. You could hear them say it as they said, "When I'm done with this, I'm going to change my habits. I'm going to spend more time with my kids. I'm going to have more fun." So for all of us, let us be reminded that we need to make room for joy. And where it arises sometimes can be as surprising as a flower that you didn't expect, and right there, it's right in front of you, or an oriole just flying through the air, or just an act of just small kindness which just breaks your heart open like that flower. It's a practice. Seek foundational joy, and it will support you when you are afraid, and it will allow you to be really glad when you're glad. A vision that comes from the people and shares its wealth spreads joy. This community is about fusion, coming together, finding ways of doing good works amongst one another and in the larger community. This vision of a beloved community provides support and encouragement when we flounder and fail to feel joy. We are here to help one another feel joy. So, are there experiences that you have had when joy suddenly just pops up as something you would never have expected? Or a joy has done something in your life that you'd never thought was possible? Or whatever joy, how has it worked in your life? How does it work in your life?
I'm not sure how many of you were there last Monday evening for the Memorial Day concert at the park, but having played in it, that was really a very joyous evening. The weather was beautiful, the crowd was big and very responsive, and the band didn't play too badly, given that we had just started practicing. And I've always found that as a musician, that when things work, there's almost nothing that matches it. And you can't predict it. You don't know. Mm. But you have to be in the moment. And sometimes the moment arises, and it's just a wonder to behold.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Oh, I'm Kathy Hedge. When I was 15, 16, somehow or another, I got the idea from my peers that it was immature to just go, "Whoa, look at that." And so one of the best things that happened to me is when I was 18 and I fell in love for the first time, and I thought, okay, we're going to stay together. It's going to be great. Well, this young man was always teasing me about my rose-colored glasses, and how, you know, I needed to grow up and be more mature. Well, I'm really glad that I'm in my 60s now, and my rose-colored glasses are in full bloom, and I say, "Oh, goody," a lot.
Thank you.
Taylor Bachman. No matter how bad of a day I have, that one word, "daddy," when I walk in the door, just brings joy.
Oh. Anybody else have a moment of joy they would like to share? All right. Sybil and, wait, hold on. Sybil and then Dick.
Hi, Sybil Perkins. We had the joy of spending 11 days in New England with my son and visiting Maine for the first time. And I cannot even describe the, my son and I went on a sunset sail on a four-masted sailing ship that is, was big enough for 200 people, but there were only about 10 of us because it wasn't tourist season. And they used the motor to get off the pier, but then cut the motor, and, you know, my son helped raise the sails. And the quiet on the ocean, sailing around the islands in the bay, and we experienced quiet for a while, and then all of a sudden there was this voice, and there was a man on board who got out a guitar and started singing old John Denver songs and James Taylor. And the voice in the silence across the water, I have no words for it. Mm. It will be with me forever.
Thank you, Sybil.
I immediately thought of the first time I sat, opened one of those big windows, and the screens are so fine you can't, you don't really see them. And I felt I was outdoors, but in the comfort of the inside. And it was sort of a magical feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of with Kathy on this. I find a lot of joy in the world. Just opening my eyes in the morning and seeing the sun coming through my curtains, or having people over to my house, and just the camaraderie of that is enough to just make me want to cry sometimes. I love life, and beauty, the beauty of the natural world particularly.
Thank you, Marilyn. Would anybody else like to share?
I had joy when I was visiting Provincetown, Massachusetts. I got to watch the whales, and it was the one came right up by the boat, and it was just the most amazing thing I ever seen. It's really cool.
Anybody else? Anne. Thank you, Serena.
Well, I have a similar word to whoever was over there, Grandma. And also right here in Manhattan, I love Kanza Prairie. Anytime I go out there, any time of the year, it's just so inspiring to be up there and realize how many millions of years those rocks and grasses have been out there, and it's just a very inspiring moment for me usually. So.
Last night before putting the chickens to bed, a scarlet tanager nicked my ear. It flew so fast, they were in a tussle with each other over territory, and phoom! I thought, whoa, this is a good day. So let us stand as you're able and sing our closing hymn. Thank you, everybody, for sharing. I've got Peace Like a River, number 100.
Peace like a river.
dance, jump for joy as soon as possible. We have a bounce house, and there's no age limit on that. Life is not meant to be endured. It is to be enjoyed.